Chrome will be cookieless. This will massively impact the ability for us as marketers to tap into data, which we once were able to kind of richly get our hands on.
Yeah, that's it. From day one, cookies have been the tool that the internet has used to track a user on a device, different websites, and take different actions.
Welcome back to the Smarter Marketer podcast. I am joined today by my brother, David Lawrence, my partner in crime. Dave, how are you?
James, I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, very, very good. Very excited for our conversation on a very, very exciting topic, first-party data.
If data and privacy can't get you going, what can?
100%. This will no doubt be the most listened to pod of the year with a title like Why You Need to Collect First-Party Data.
I think it will, but can I say one thing before we get started?
Always.
I get worried whenever we put data into a title that a lot of marketers tune out straight away. I want to stress that as much as we've got data in the title, this is not a deep dive on data or even the specifics of a whole bunch of the changes that are happening because of privacy. This is a general chat about what marketers and in particular non-technical marketers should know and should do.
I've just gone into ChatGPT and said, can you rework this title to not include the word data? And so it's now being called Why Prioritizing First Party Insights is Crucial for Marketers.
That's an incorrect headline. Thank you, ChatGPT.
So now we can go deep on data. Okay. No, we joke, but it is it's a very, very important topic for marketers. And I think with all the changes in the landscape over the last kind of couple of years, most marketers, even those that shudder at the idea of data insights and the tech side of things, kind of know to be important. So I think let's just start super top level. What is first party data versus third party data?
Yeah, it's a really simple difference. So first party data is the data that you go out and collect directly from your users. So if someone's on your website and they fill in a form and that goes into your CRM, that's first party data. If someone fills in a survey form or a feedback form and you collect that, you put that in your CRM, wherever you store it, it's first party data. So literally it's your dealings one-to-one with your users, not even one-to-one necessarily, but yeah, there's no one in between. The third party data, as you would expect, is when another organization or a platform has gone out and collected that data from a user, and then you're tapping into that data. So you didn't collect it. You don't have a direct relationship necessarily with that user, but you're going to use something they've given someone else for your marketing efforts.
Yeah, exactly. Bang on. And so for marketers that might not have dug as much into this topic, why is continuing to, like, well, I guess what are ways that we have historically relied on third-party data and why is that becoming problematic?
Yeah. So digital marketing in general was built on the miracle of third-party data. So often in traditional marketing, you know, it was a relatively data-free space in many ways, whereas the beauty and the power of digital was that these platforms like Google and Facebook, now Meta, were able to look at huge amounts of data across huge numbers of users and either aggregate or even use personally specific bits of data. And then as marketers, we could tap into that. So we could say, hey, you know what? We want to take a message out to women in a certain age group, in a certain location with certain interests. No problem at all. Third-party data was able to find that really specific group of people amongst the masses of data that are within Facebook. So obviously that's great. Not the sort of thing you could effectively do with TV or radio or billboards or newspapers. Sure, you can find publications that attracted a particular demographic or a particular interest, but it was a blunt instrument, right? Whereas digital allowed third-party data to become just the fuel that fed our actions and our campaigns and dictated where the money flowed.
Yeah, that's it. And changes now afoot where Google, for instance, we're recording this pod in February 2024, last month, it started to basically take cookies out of Google Chrome and is basically saying that, you know, within a short period of time, Chrome will be cookieless. So therefore, this will massively impact the ability for us as marketers to tap into data, which we once were able to kind of richly get our hands on.
Yeah, that's it. From day one, cookies have been the tool that the internet has used to track a user on a device as they move through different websites and take different actions. So literally the entire internet and the marketing that's been built up around it relies on it. So it's pretty huge. And Google aren't making this change in a vacuum. And obviously they're following on from things like GDPR in Europe, some really powerful legislation that's been happening in Europe and in other territories as well, which is taking the privacy and the data of individuals really, really seriously. And Google, like everyone else, has no choice but to follow.
That's it. It just feels like it has been a move by the platforms to either self-correct or it was going to be done for them. So they've kind of taken that leap themselves. And I think it's also worth noting that it doesn't mean that as marketers and as digital marketing practitioners that we're not going to be able to target users based on a whole range of different traits and behaviors and different targeting capabilities, but just relying on cookies and relying on a lot of the granular segments that cookies have given us is starting to kind of dissipate.
Yeah, that's it. And I think, you know, the whole follow the money principle, but if you look at Google and you look at Meta and you look at dozens of other platforms around the world, they make their money off advertising. So there's some extraordinarily smart people in all those organizations spending an awful lot of time and money trying to figure out how they can still make advertising profitable for the advertiser as well as for themselves. So yeah, the easy path is being taken from all of us, but there will be other paths. There's paths that are already appearing now that look promising, and there's paths that we can't even dream up yet that will come up to allow marketers to be targeted with where they're spending their money.
Yeah.
It's just not going to be like it has been in the past.
That's it. I think that's a nice segue into why first-party data and how first-party data. Like what are we recommending to our clients? What are we seeing ourselves in terms of first-party data and kind of the why of it?
Yeah, I mean, I love this topic, and not because of the legislation side of the privacy stuff or the technical nerdy stuff around cookies and consent and all the rest of it. I love the topic because it's such a good example of how marketing keeps on forgetting some of the basics. Like, I think as digital marketers, we were all allowed to be quite lazy with the way we could get great results through all this aggregated third-party data. But good marketing has, for many companies, always meant getting as close to your customers as is possible. And so often that's meant having access to really good quality data about them and maintaining that data and treating it like the prized asset and prized bit of IP that it is in your company. So the question of why first party data, let's forget all this privacy stuff or the consent stuff or all the cookie stuff. Let's just say if your consumer that you're targeting isn't going to come to you to buy one product, one off, never to return, then there's a strong business case. And there has always been a strong business case for knowing who they are, why they behave the way they behave, the different bits of information you might want to know so you can personalize how you deal with them, so you can segment them properly. So yeah, the why for first party data is the same as it's always been, which is it allows you to make great decisions as a marketer and send out the right message to the right person at the right time in the right place. It's just that it's become a little bit more important now, or even a lot more important, because of the fact that third-party data is simply no longer going to be as good as it has been.
And that's a good point. And there's been this trend over the last 10 years where the platforms have gradually they've eroded, particularly I think smaller businesses, they've eroded businesses' ability to control and own assets, where you look at the social platforms where at the very beginning, you know, it used to be kind of, you have 100 followers, you pump a post out on Facebook and 20 of those people would see it. Very quickly, we got to a point where, you know, less than one would see it and you had to basically pay to be in there. We've seen the steps that TikTok, Instagram, Facebook have taken to keep users in platform. They just don't allow you to kind of get out back into company websites. The rise of zero-click searches in Google, where Google has, you know, scraped information and serves up those results before users can actually go to someone's website. And over time, it's been very, very difficult for businesses to have control because these kind of behemoths have come in, and that's not going anywhere different when we look at, you know, large language models and the rise of platforms like TikTok. But this is a way where you can have control. And I think we saw it so obviously during COVID, when a lot of clients cut media budgets initially, but there were those that had invested in good organic search for a long period of time. But then those that had a huge database, right? A well-maintained, well-kept up-to-date database. And, you know, email marketing is only one thing you can do with first-party data, but time and time again, it is the most cost-effective channel, digital marketing channel, for basically all businesses.
Yeah.
And so if you've been relying on paid media or relying on platforms, whether organic or paid, to kind of do your heavy lifting, I feel in a more macro sense, it also is a counterpoint to that. And those trends aren't going anywhere, right? So I think first-party data is a way for you to kind of maximize the value you get from every touch point, every prospective customer, every past customer, every existing customer.
Yeah.
And we see it, right? The clients that do the best at Rocket are the ones that, yeah, they might have a great search strategy, they might have a great social strategy, awesome website, but they also then have a belief and an investment in data and CRM. And it's not just email and phone, it's segmenting on data points that allow for different emails or different SMSs or birthday messages or whatever the use case might be. It's kind of, if you're not doing that, you kind of got one hand tied behind your back when you're fighting your competition in whatever segment that might be.
Yeah, oh, that's so true. And as you were going through those points, I sort of felt it's the age old argument between strategy versus tactics. And I think so often people are playing around with tactics and confusing them for a strategy. So if you're putting everything into paid media, sure, you're going to have a strategy within paid media of how you're going to execute. But paid media is the only thing you're doing as a marketing team. That shows a lack of strategy as far as I'm concerned. And when we do start as marketers putting together great strategies for how we're going to genuinely make a difference for the organizations we're working for, then that strategy typically requires you to get close to your customers more now than 5 years ago or 10 years ago, but probably no more now than 30 or 40 years ago when this kind of stuff would have been absolutely required.
That's right. I had Kat Warboys on the pod. The point that she was making around first party data was that, I think it's interesting. I think we've gone from this kind of batch and blast approach to things like email marketing, say from 2000 to 2010. And then it feels we've kind of gone on this segmentation route from 2010 to 2020, where, you know, send lapsed customers or customers that have bought product X this communication, and send customers that have bought that this different piece of communication. And she was kind of talking about how one of the big use cases for HubSpot is that whole integration of sales and marketing together in a platform, and where it's going to be really, really powerful is in, probably, I was going to say 5 years, probably less than that. But the big thing around AI and tech is going to be hyper-personalization, and the personalization piece to do it truly effectively will require awesome quality data and really, really high quality maintenance of your first party data. The idea being that, right, you know, customers across the board, the expectation around marketing comms will go to such a high level that you know, if you're interested in digital marketing, you won't be just expecting some generic EDM from Rocket. You're going to be expecting something hyper-personalized to where you're at in your particular journey, whether that might be a particular channel or a particular industry or whatever it might be. I look at businesses that have kind of gone, it's too hard. It's too hard to build out a system within our organization that truly captures data, or, you know, our sales team's just a bit lazy, or they all like to do it their own way, or we've been running it this way forever. But you won't exist in 5 years' time in terms of having a successful marketing function if your competitors are doing that and you're not.
Yeah, it's true. It's an interesting angle that opens up as well, because most marketing teams have less budget than they would like, and often budgets get squeezed every year and we're expected to do more for it. Now, the changes in consent and privacy and the pressures of AI, they really mean that mediocrity is easy to get to, but is completely not a competitive advantage. So mediocre is no good. So if you do have limited resources and you have to get closer to your customers and you have to have great data and you have to segment and personalize and you need great creative, because AI is going to make average creative worthless, then again, it comes back to that strategy thing. What are you going to say no to? Because you shouldn't do 5 or 10 things. If doing 5 or 10 things means you're going to do them all pretty poorly, is not going to work. You're being forced into an arena of doing things better and better. So smart marketers are literally going to have to figure out which of the channels that they can be good at are most important to their customers, which of the activities that they can be good at are most important to their customers. And again, it just keeps coming back, doesn't it, to great first party data and how can you make that decision about what's going to be the right way to communicate with someone if you don't know enough about who they are and what they're going to respond to.
100%. Any recommendations you have on how marketers can get buy-in on this topic? I think because we've got a pretty diverse base of listeners to the pod. You've got some people operating in kind of one person marketing teams through to people in big marketing teams, complex organizations, hard to get things moving. And data is something that I think can sit across a whole bunch of different teams. Sometimes it'll be sitting in marketing. Sometimes sales teams will have a kind of ownership or kind of control over the narrative around data in a business. Other businesses will have it kind of on the customer side. And then you've kind of also then got tech teams, you know, sitting maybe more in IT. But how do you get buy-in that collecting this information, you know, it might not pay dividends in the quarter? And I think so many marketers are under pressure to win the month and win the quarter that the idea of taking a whole bunch of stakeholders on a journey to invest in the future can be quite difficult.
I mean, a model that I like to use with people, and it's really simple, it's a really old model, is the pyramid, the concept that, you know, depending on your industry, perhaps only 3% of your potential target market are ready to buy right now. So if you're relying on third-party data and you're running ads that are targeting particular groups, they're only going to come across you when they're in that 3% of the market ready to buy kind of situation. And we all know that that's the most bombarded part of the journey, right? Like, they're the people that are seeing the most ads. They're the ones that have got the most choice. They're probably speaking to lots of companies that can provide the service they're looking for, the good or service they're looking for. So with third-party data becoming more challenging, it's going to be harder and more expensive to get to those 3%. And there'll be lots of average marketing teams throwing even more money into that part of the pyramid. If you want to convince stakeholders that you need to invest in first-party data, show them the other 97% and say, this is a long-term play. If people only buy our product or our service once every 3 years, then there's only going to be a certain percentage of that market that's coming into the tip of the pyramid. We have to make sure that we are consistently filling up our database with more and more people that will one day be in that 3%, so that we can talk to them on a regular basis. And before they even go out to market and start clicking on ads or finding stuff in social or whatever it is they use to complete their buy journey, you want to be disruptive, get that message in front of them. So it's a little bit slower. It won't give you short-term results. And I know some stakeholders can't tolerate that, but the long-term play is there. The long-term play is 100% there. And the best way to do it, really great, healthy first-party data used in a really clever and considered way to speak to people, regardless of where they are.
That's it. And I think it's important to kind of communicate that it's not, we're talking about data, but it doesn't necessarily have to be used for just email marketing and SMS messaging. Like, it's, as we've seen, our ability to do less in some of the platforms in terms of targeting, we've also seen the ability to do a lot more, and huge amounts of work is now done in terms of custom audiences, right? Where you're taking segments of our customers' databases, feeding them into the platforms, having the platforms make a match. Google, over the last kind of 7 to 10 years, has basically gone from, users had a pretty anonymous relationship with Google for such a long period of time where you weren't logged in, you were kind of just doing your thing in search and maybe in Maps and in YouTube. But over time, they've kind of forced us to have a Google account for us to search and access YouTube and use Google Maps and use Gmail and whatever else. Users are logged in. Users are logged in on Facebook. These platforms have an incredible ability to kind of match mobile numbers and phone numbers. We're seeing clients who have adopted that type of approach getting more and more segmented, I guess, in the way that they're using those cohorts of data.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, the platform, like I was saying before, you know, these platforms make their money off data and advertising, and they're going to continue to be really clever. But you have to stay logged into Google now if you're using it to log into third-party sites. There's a million reasons why we stay logged into all these platforms. Even though I remember when the original privacy concerns came out many, many years ago about what was happening when you stayed logged into Google and to Meta, and I think everyone was shocked and started logging out when they weren't actively on the platform. But I suspect that most people have relaxed that now because the convenience factor is so high.
Yeah, 100%. There's a good case study, I think, with Google, which is a website that some of you might know about. They've got a case study in partnership with HubSpot. I think it was published early last year, Embracing First-Party Data, 3 Success Stories in Partnership with HubSpot. That's a good one, just looking at how 3 different brands across different segments are kind of using first-party data to kind of effectively market both within Google, but also direct. I think worth talking a little bit about how we at Rocket use it ourselves, because I think we've gone on a journey there. And a lot of what, when you were talking about that kind of pyramid, it's really changed the way that we've shaped our own marketing strategy as well.
Yeah, it really has. And and you go back long enough in the Rocket journey, and we probably, like a lot of other agencies, were putting a lot of our efforts and our marketing budgets into bottom of the funnel paid search. You know, we were happy to meet those 3% of people when they were ready to buy. It's just a really competitive space, and it's an unreliable space to a certain extent as well. So not only is it hard to get what you want from a marketing outcome, but when you're then having a sales conversation, it's also really challenging because that customer has no loyalty to you. They've only ever heard of you a week ago, and they're going to be talking to other people as well. So yeah, we've been changing our marketing over a long time, and we love thought leadership. This pod's a great example of it, but we love getting out there and trying to help people and share the things that we know and challenge people's understandings of what marketing is in a digital sense. So yeah, the backbone of that for us is first party data, and we love it now. We have a really great database, and if we have something to say on a webinar, if we have something to say in a podcast, if we have something to say in a blog, we know we can go straight to our database and promote it, and we can segment it and we can personalize it. And it's been fantastic for marketing in general, but it's also great. I know when the team go out to speak to companies who are thinking of working with us, it's just a transformative experience because they feel like they already know us. So this whole first party data thing, it people really shouldn't think about it as a begrudging thing you do because Google and Meta are changing the rules. It really is an opportunity to think much more deeply about your marketing, what it's trying to achieve, who your customer is, and what you need to know about them in order to have a relationship that's valuable for them, which then becomes valuable for you.
It's so true. Like, I think you have to do it because of the practical, tactical situation that we find ourselves in. Mm. But you're bang on right, which is it all ties back into good old-fashioned marketing, and the long and the short of it, Benet and Fields, which looks at long-term marketing activities versus kind of short-term or kind of burst paid activities designed to kind of get a short-term outcome. The most businesses have the balance wrong, right? Which is generally you kind of, you know, 70 or 80% should be long-term and the rest should be short-term. And we have found that, which is people don't change digital agencies every month. You might be in it for 12 months, you might be in it for 2 years, 3 years, 4 years with an incumbent. And we are meeting marketers, not when they're at that pointy end, but just talking to them, you know, when they're just going about their business. But inevitably, and we probably are in that 3%, you know, market where most people are pretty happy with the current status quo. But when they do come into market, everything you learn about the long and the short of it's true, which is you have a much better chance of closing an opportunity if you've been influencing someone prior to them coming into market. The trust is there, the credibility is there, and kind of they've almost self-identified that they want to work with you. And for us, yeah, it is, we've got more and more sophisticated we use HubSpot, but it doesn't mean that, you know, you have to use HubSpot, but more and more sophisticated with segmenting and personalization and taking segments of people we might have spoken to that we might have put a proposal forward to at some point, being able to show them certain communications or showing them an ad on YouTube or LinkedIn, whatever it might be. But I'd hate to think if we hadn't have kind of gone down that path, you know, 2, 3, 4 years ago, how hard it would be now to be winning that kind of bottom of the funnel search type space.
Yeah, that's it. It's always really hard to know how things are going to end up, but certainly speaking for our own marketing, you know, we assume that remarketing is going to become a bit more expensive and a little bit less effective because of privacy changes. We assume that some of our kind of top of the funnel awareness campaigns can become a little bit more expensive and a little bit less targeted. Maybe not expensive in terms of each impression, but more expensive overall to find the right person. But you're right, if we relied on the effectiveness of those third-party data-driven campaigns, if that was the only thing we did, we would be very, very nervous. But because the primary driver of marketing success for us is already first-party data, and these other channels just supplement it and feed it to a certain extent, it's I guess it's an annoyance more than a massive concern. And like I said before, if you have customers who you hope have more than one interaction with you and need to actually think about a purchase, then you're going to get a return on investment from doing first party data well. And the more complex the buyer journey is, the more complex the relationship is, the harder people have to think before they make a decision. And it doesn't matter whether it's B2B or B2C. It doesn't matter whether the aim of your marketing is to generate a lead or trigger a sale on your website. None of those things matter. The benefits of still knowing your customer and being able to talk with them in a personalized, segmented way directly and extract data from them and store that and use that for insights and actions, it just is so powerful.
Yeah, it's not going anywhere. So I think in terms of practical takeaways, like obviously looking at your own business, right? Like, how is data being stored? Are we taking it seriously? Is it kept up to date? Are we then actually using it effectively, as we did with clients with GA4? Like, we were kind of on that, you know, well and truly 12 months before the change took effect. We're moving all of our clients across, you know, have already done or are doing so. Google consent rules need to be done by March, I think it is. Is that right?
Yeah, and that's a really important one. So if you have any customers in the EU, and I think maybe in the States, but definitely the EU, if you haven't implemented the Google consent controls, your right to use GA4 and Google Ads can be taken away from you. So it's pretty powerful stuff. There's also a couple of other integrations that are really important, both from Meta and Google, that allow you to access more data, I guess, and some more powerful marketing options, even in a cookieless, consent-driven world. So if you don't do those things, things will continue working for you, but you won't be getting access to some of the cool data you can still get access to.
Yeah, and that's like all these things. I think you can hang on looking back, but the reality is your competition won't, and you're never going to have more power than the platform. So just do it and do it quickly and move on. I guess any other talking points around first-party data, the who, the why, the what?
Look, for me, it always comes down to the business case, understanding the value that the thing you're marketing actually delivers to people, and then understanding who those people are, where they hang out, what they value. And just, you know, you should never jump into this saying, we're going to do first-party data and it's going to be huge. It should be, we're going to explore what's most powerful for our marketing in the current environment, and we're going to understand what the options are. So if you don't understand what first-party data is, I hope you understand it more after this chat. But if someone didn't understand it...
It'd be problematic and damning for us if you've listened to it and don't.
It would be very problematic. Got to understand it, and then you've got to work out where it fits in for you. But I guess all I'm saying is I would be very surprised if the majority of people listening to this didn't have significant value that was being left on the table in the area of first-party data and all the marketing options that you get as a result. It's an asset your marketing team and your business as a whole can own, as opposed to things you simply rent when you're doing targeting options through third-party platforms.
That's it, isn't it? That's kind of the crux of it. Good point. As listeners know, we always finish the pod with what's your best piece of advice for an in-house marketer. A bit more difficult given, you know, you're a repeat guest on the pod and you've already given that answer. So it looks like Hayley's changed the question. But which AFL team is going? No, it doesn't say that. What's your one piece of marketing advice going into the new year?
Oh, yeah, that's a good soft one. The good thing with this is, though, as a repeat offender, I can't remember how I answered the original question previously, so I would have happily just answered it again, probably the same way. And I suspect that my bit of marketing advice is going to be maybe the same as my overall advice that I gave in the past, which is make sure you genuinely understand what the business metric is that the marketing team can influence, and understand the differences between the really important metrics that we all look at as marketers that matter to us. We care about impressions and clicks and views and time on site. Those things matter, but none of those ever are an actual business metric that the business will genuinely care about. So businesses care about revenue and profit and retention and new customers and average sale values and all that kind of stuff. So find out for your business, what's the one you can genuinely influence? And then whether it's long-term planning or day-to-day work, think about, are you about to do something that might positively influence a marketing metric, but do nothing to the business metric, in which case it's time to rethink it. So why bother improving your conversion rate if the people you're converting were never going to be good fit customers? Mm. They're not going to influence the revenue line. So you would rather have a lower conversion rate if the people you brought in were higher quality, as an extreme example. But that's kind of my advice. Just go back to the business metrics, understand how you can influence them.
It's a great one. And I think that is something that, whether by design or not, the best senior marketers that we deal with that have kind of smashed their careers are in charge of big teams and big budgets and big salaries. They're the ones that do that, right? They have a seat. And that then means you get a seat at the table, right? You end up getting promoted and having business conversations rather than kind of being dictated to and given budgets that you don't think are realistic or can achieve what needs to be achieved.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, in a well-functioning world, it's the only way to have a seat at the table. Mm. Like, marketing is a business function. It's there to change the future when it comes to revenue and outcomes. So yeah, if you don't get that connection, you're going to struggle.
Love it. David, always great to have you on the pod. Look forward to the next one.
Great fun. Loved it too.
Thanks for listening to the Smarter Marketer podcast. Stay up to date about new episodes on LinkedIn and Instagram by searching for Smarter Marketer podcast. You can purchase your own copy of Smarter Marketer via the Amazon website.
And if you want a second opinion about your business's approach to digital marketing, send me an email, jamesl@rocketagency.com.au, or visit the rocketagency.com.au website. Thanks for your time.